It's a long way from the cotton fields of rural Pike County, Alabama, to the U.S. Congress.
It is a great distance from more than 40 years ago from rural Alabama and the cotton fields and peanut fields and corn fields and preaching to chickens to the United States Congress.
Okay. How did you do it?
I kept my eyes on the prize. I stayed focused. I worked hard. My mother and father talked me into work, and I worked hard. I never gave up. I never kept trying. I kept on trying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your book has gotten rave reviews, great reviews.
Well, I'm pleased that the response to the book has been really great. I'm very pleased with that. Here in Washington, in Atlanta, and all around the country, the places that I visit, several national reviews, they've just been very good, really.
Mm-hmm. And you know, reading the book, and I'm not through with it yet, but just reading the book, you talk about, I guess, the prologue, walking with the wind, the day when that storm hit, and you and some of your cousins, other children were at your aunt's house, and the walking, back and forth to keep, to help keep the house down.
Yeah.
And then you go on to talk about, you're walking with the wind whenever a storm might hit elsewhere. Can you talk a little bit about, in the civil rights, but can you talk about a little bit like growing up and you talk in the book about your mother's, the spirit that she had, and then later you talk about the spirit in the civil rights, the spirit was at the center of the civil rights movement. Can you just talk about maybe some of your early days and then come on up to the civil rights movement?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a very religious home. With my mother and father, my sisters and brothers, and my family and extended family, my grandparents and great-grandparents, had a great sense of faith. They always believed that somehow, in some way, things were going to get better. We had to work and do the best we could, and my mother would always say something like, We have to make do. We have to use what we have. We don't have anything else. Mm-hmm. And I would complain sometimes about how we worked so hard in the field, and at the end, we didn't see much.
Mm-hmm.
And she would say, "Well, we got to continue. We can't give up.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to work. Things will get better."
Mm-hmm.
And it's like planting a crop.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be cotton or corn or peanuts, and some years you didn't get great production because of the weather, but you had to have faith that maybe one year or some year we're going to work out.
Uh-huh.
It's also like setting a setting hen with eggs and expecting the chicks to hatch, and sometimes all of the eggs didn't hatch. You put 15 eggs under and maybe only 9 or 10 or 11 will hatch, but you had faith that some of those eggs were going to hatch and there would be little chicks.
Okay.
So from my early growing up, that element of faith and hope and possibility became something real for me.
Okay.
I was always hoping and expecting something better.
Okay.
In the book, I talk about the incident where a first cousin of mine, the two of us had this dream about cutting down a large pine tree,
uh-huh.
and we were going to make a bus out of it. And the big part of the tree, we were going to, the round part at the bottom, we were going to make wheels and we were going to roll out of Alabama.
Uh-huh.
It was always dreaming somehow in some way there's something better. So I grew up like that.
Okay.
Expecting and sort of hoping that things would get better, but knowing in the final analysis that I would have to help, and I have to be involved in that process.
Okay, because you mentioned a few minutes ago you're complaining, and in the book you're talking about the conditions, working for the man, And you talk about how much money your mother and father made in the cotton fields. What, 400 pounds, picking about 400 pounds of cotton, $1.40 a day, something like that. But then you would complain, and then I think your mother would get agitated sometimes. But I guess you sensed that things weren't right, that you all were being exploited.
Oh, yeah.
At an early age.
Oh, yeah.
And then, okay.
At a very early age, I felt that we were being exploited, and that my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents were being exploited and have been exploited for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And somehow that system of exploitation had to be ended. Uh-huh. That's when my mother said to us, go to school, get an education, so you won't have to do what we're doing.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like that system, and I think more than anything else that drove me to go to school to try to get an education. Okay. And that's why I would, when they wanted me from time to time to work in the field, I would run under the house mm-hmm. and hide and wait for the school bus to come along. And from the moment I heard the school bus coming up the hill, I would run from under the house, from under the porch, and board the school bus or slip off to school.
Okay. And you, in the book, you talk, too, about the beauty of where you grew up.
Well, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was during the spring and summer. It was very green, plush green.
Okay.
A lot of pine trees and fields and corn fields and cotton fields. A lot of grass. And at night, it would be darker than 1,000 midnights.
Okay.
Because we didn't have electric lights, so we had lamps.
Okay.
And we had an outdoor toilet. We didn't have running water. We had a well. And you heard the birds sing. You saw the birds.
Mm-hmm.
You heard the crickets and the grasshoppers.
And you talk about being, said your family was dirt poor.
Oh, yeah. We were poor. Uh-huh. There's no question about that.
Okay. And later, I guess you, not as a child, but later you realize, you talk about the, in your book, the pain of where you go, the pain and the neglect. And you know, you just talk about when you started realizing that.
Well, I saw what we had to do. Before I came to Nashville, I didn't have my own room.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have my own bed. I shared a bed with several brothers
mm-hmm.
and I shared a room with them. So when I left home in September 1957 to go to Nashville, it was a different experience for me.
Uh-huh.
I was coming out of rural poverty mm-hmm. as a dirt poor child at the age of 17
mm-hmm.
in Nashville became a different world for me.
Okay.
I left home with a $100 bill, more money than I ever had in my hand, and a Foot Locker with a suit, some shirts, and underwears, and maybe an extra pair of shoes. I don't remember if I had an extra pair of shoes or not, but everything I had was there.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I left behind that I could claim was the chickens that I had been raising. I couldn't bring them to Nashville.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you came to Nashville, and you eventually became one of the children that Halberstam writes
right.
about. And you know, you all, you know, you, Diane Nash, and in the book, you know, you talk about that. Any, and I know you don't regret it, but you ever thought about it if you had to do it all over again?
No. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it the same way. Nashville was a blessing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Nashville.
Okay.
I came of age. I grew up there while I studied the philosophy of nonviolence as a student at American Baptist Theological Seminary. That environment, the environment of Nashville, made me a different person.
Okay.
Made me a better person. If it hadn't been for Jim Lawson and the nonviolent workshops in the city of Nashville, I don't know where I would be today.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel more than lucky. I feel very blessed that I had an opportunity to come under the influence of so many wonderful people in the city of Nashville.
Okay.